between Essex and Surrey is that Essex declared at their lunchtime total of 255 for 5. But we'll have a detailed cricket scoreboard just after the 3 o'clock news.
Morning, Abdul.
Goodness.
London EC4. Or see the Evening Standard for details.
Minutes to 3, LBC on Jubilee Day. Carol Allen and Vivian White with you through till 4:45. Carol, are you a great one for pageantry, for going and seeing the boys in the band marching past?
Well, no, I'm not, actually, because I was talking to a woman on the train last night coming back from Dover, and she made the very valid point. Londoners are very lucky. We've got pageantry all the year round, the changing of the guard, the horse guards, everything else, and we never bother to go and see it unless we've got a visitor from overseas or from outside London with us. But, I mean, I think today Londoners have really been enjoying the pageantry.
Do you mean to say you're one of those Londoners who've never been to London's own monuments, because that's only what the tourists do?
Well, I have, but usually when I've been doing stories there, I suppose I'm a little bit ashamed to go round as a tourist, and if I can take my tape recorder along and a notebook, I feel I'm covered. In fact, the first time I ever saw inside Westminster Abbey was when I was doing a story on should there be so many tourists inside Westminster Abbey, and it was the first time I'd ever been inside it myself.
Well, you rotten unsporting reporter. It's curious, when tourists ask homegrown Londoners if they can tell them the way to monuments, really for most homegrown Londoners, the answer is I don't know, I've never been there.
I usually know my way from monument to monument as a sort of way of getting about London.
Personally, I'm a great fan of pageantry, not for any reason at all, because it looks good and because it sounds good. In the days of my youth, or at least what passed for the days of my youth, we used to live in Germany, where my family lived with the army out in Germany, and they used to lay on the most fantastic parades for the Queen's birthday parades. And there, it was the most splendid public relations show, because the British Army, if I may say so, following from Doreen Dawn, who says the British girls are the most beautiful in the world, the British Army marches for formal occasions as no other army marches for formal occasions. It isn't frightening, and it really is an absolutely splendid show. You've never seen the army marching in their full drill?
No, I've heard the story about the British Army marching on its stomach, but that's rather different. But I did have a friend over from Australia a few months ago, and that was the first time I had seen a lot of London's monuments. I took her around, we went to the Tower of London, we saw Buckingham Palace, we saw the whole bit. And as I said, I think that's one of the few times when Londoners do get to see their monuments.
Polish up your silver, Carol, just for a second, because the Regent Street Jewellers, Carrington's, have come up with a rather special idea to celebrate the Queen's Jubilee. They've invited the Professor of Silversmithing, not very easy to say even on Jubilee Day, at the Royal College of Art, Gerald Benny, to exhibit some of his work there for the next month. And amongst his exhibits, which have been loaned, is part of a set of tableware which members of the Royal Family clubbed together to buy for the Queen's silver wedding anniversary. Di Latham's been looking around the exhibition with Professor Benny as her guide.
This, in fact, is breakfast silver, you say?
It is breakfast silver, yes.
But with candelabra, how many were there?
Simply, I suppose, to decorate the table, in fact, and to make the centrepiece for the table.
How many were there of them? Do you know, there are four straight ones.
That is it, yes.
That's the four straight ones and one double. And now they've got square bases, and on these are initials on each of the four sides.
Yes.
Who are they? What's the idea of that?
They are the initials of the royal children, in fact.
Quite a lot of them, because they've got quite a lot of initials, if you're counting all
their
names.
Well, there's four to each, as it happens, rather luckily. They fitted onto the four sides. In fact, that's why we changed the bases from round to square, in order to make that as a sort of working pattern.
And from there onwards, now you have, I think, I suppose you could call it your trademark, this particular way of beating silver. Is that fair to say?
Yes,
because
it's
something we're used to now.
Would
you like to, what it looks like is kind of the rough bark of a tree.
It is, in this case, a sort of bark texture, which is done by hammering. In fact, it was an accidental fault that I discovered about 14 years ago, I suppose, because I was hammering with a planishing hammer, so-called, which has a smooth, polished face on it, and this hammer had identical end. One was polished and one was for use for knocking nails in, actually, and I happened to get them the wrong way around and started the hammer and got these extraordinary marks showing. And at the time, I thought that I'd just made a mistake. But then, looking back, trying to erase them, I thought that, you know, we got some good marks there. So, in fact, I ground the hammer again and went on doing it on another piece of silver. And this evolved in one go, sort of over and out, And we went on using it and gradually found how to use it on flat surfaces and how to use it on rounded surfaces and things. Making a tea set, there's over a quarter of a million blows. A teapot, I mean. Just one teapot.
Well, over here, another case over here, you have some enamelled goblets up there. Not quite like anything I've ever seen before. Now, have you achieved that surface? Because that's not normally enamel.
It's uninteresting because the underneath the surface, you can see the colour of enamel and the depth of colour, different tones of colour. And the tones are caused by the depth of the enamel. And the depth actually is achieved by hammering with the same type of hammer. It's exactly the same as the surface which you would see on a normal piece of silver by us, but then covered with this high melting point glass, which is what the enamel actually is. The enamel is in the form of a sort of sand, which is pasted on very, very carefully with very, very small amounts at a time, and then the whole thing's brought up to about a temperature of just over 800 degrees, and it flushes all over the silver. The silver is underneath the enamel, the glass colour.
Your latest work, in fact, is not bejeweled, and it has, you might call a certain Arab influence. At least it has something down like a minaret in the centre of that, which is what a drink set.
It's an ice bucket with goblets round, quite a large tray, and a spire which looks a bit like one of the minarets at Brighton Pavilion, or something one wants to describe it some way.
And what about the goblets? Now, these are fairly simple, aren't they?
Yes, they're very much the sort of thing that people drink. I suppose gin and tonic or whiskey and water or something out of, or a mixed cocktail or something of the sort.
Professor Gerald Benny, modesty itself. And now we go over to the Guildhall, where the Lord Mayor of London is proposing the loyal toast to Her Majesty the Queen.
Inspecting the cadets at the Nautical College Pangbourne on Founders Day, June the 4th, 1943. With him, because your mother was unwell, is your Majesty, age 17 years, 2 months. The cadet officer, as right marker of the rear rank, is me. Age 17 years, 7 months. Never did I dream that 34 years later, almost to the day, I would carry the sword of my city before my sovereign in the house of my God at that girl's silver jubilee Thanksgiving service. And so it is with particular pride and satisfaction that I claim the right of this ancient office to try sincerely, if inadequately, to express the thanks of the city and the nation for the first 25 years of Your Majesty's reign. Our generation has seen much change. Still at school when the war began, but old enough to serve before it was two-thirds over, the great post-war struggle to rebuild our shattered cities and economy, the change from empire to commonwealth, from imperial power to membership of the European Community. Kipling, in his Recessional, wrote, "Far called our navies melt away." Melted down, might have read the post-war version, as we beat our swords into plowshares and faced our new world and responsibilities. In the great family of nations that represents the Commonwealth, suddenly it seemed that all the children had grown up and sought, as children do, to spread their wings and leave the nest. But at home, providing a sense of love and understanding, stability and a common standard, stood the monarchy in the person of Your Majesty. But analogies can be dangerous and sometimes misleading, and this one could be an oversimplification were it not for one significant fact. Within the Commonwealth framework, leadership can only be by example and not by precept. And what finer example to the world of the family concept could there be than that set by Your Majesty? Blessed with a mother whose special place in the hearts of the people has seldom, if ever, been equaled in our long history. And yet never intrudes on your role or the natural affection you universally command, but rather enhances it. A strong and respected husband at your side, and children of whom any mother would be justly proud. For 25 years you have given to this country and to the Commonwealth the love and devotion that stems from self-discipline and self-sacrifice. You have travelled far and often so that those less fortunate than we might get to know you and experience firsthand what we at home are privileged to see for ourselves. Your Majesty's use of the walkabout, as on your way here from St. Paul's, is indicative of your desire to be known to your people and to meet them face to face whenever possible. The fact that this direct method of communication is deeply appreciated wherever you go can be measured by the warmth of response you must feel from all with whom you come in contact. To humanize the monarchy without detracting from its essential mystique, and to bring it adapted but intact into this modern world, requires exceptional talents with which Your Majesty has been amply endowed. Your Majesty, your people across the globe rejoice today in the completion of 25 years of your reign and look forward to many further years, secure in the knowledge that their love and affection for you will be unstintingly reciprocated 100-fold. The Commonwealth, nay, I suspect the world, waits eagerly to hear your speech. Before I yield the microphone to Your Majesty for this purpose, may I, on behalf of all your subjects, give the toast on everyone's lips today. Her Majesty the Queen.
In a few moments, Her Majesty Queen Elizabeth II will speak to the Commonwealth.
My Lord Mayor, I have had the pleasure of being entertained here on many great occasions. And I can think of no better place in which to celebrate my silver jubilee, both as Queen and head of the Commonwealth. Your welcome and your kind words in proposing my health are very much appreciated. And the response to it by your guests has touched me deeply. Guildhall in the City of London has seen many national and Commonwealth celebrations. But in all its long history, it has never witnessed the presence of so many Commonwealth heads of government. In the olden days, jubilees were celebrated at the golden 50th year. The horns were sounded, and a period of rest, mercy, and pardon was proclaimed. There was a distinct sabbatical flavour about the proceedings. It is beginning to dawn on me that a silver jubilee is of a somewhat different nature. But if this is not exactly a period of rest for us, it is certainly one of refreshment and of happiness and satisfaction. And the best of it is that it is giving us the chance to meet so many people in so many countries of the Commonwealth, to renew old friendships and to make new ones. At the Silver Jubilee of 1935 and at my coronation, the Empire and Commonwealth came to London. This time, the travelling is in both directions. And I think we can claim to be doing our fair share. During the last 25 years, I have travelled widely throughout the Commonwealth as its head. And during those years, I have seen, from a unique position of advantage, the last great phase of the transformation of the Empire into Commonwealth and the transformation of the crown from an emblem of dominion into a symbol of free and voluntary association. In all history, this has no precedent. It is easy enough to define what the Commonwealth is not. Indeed, this is quite a popular pastime. But from my own experience, I know something of what it is. It is like an iceberg, except that it's not cold. The tip is represented by the occasional meetings of the heads of government and by the Commonwealth Secretariat. But 9/10 of Commonwealth activity takes place continuously beneath the surface and unseen. Cultural activities, professional, scientific, educational, and economic bodies have between them created a network of contacts within the Commonwealth which are full of life and much valued. And right at the base of the iceberg, the part which keeps the rest afloat, is friendship and communication, largely in the English language, between peoples who were originally brought together by the events of history and who now understand that they share a common humanity. I have also no doubt that politically, the Commonwealth has something rare and valuable to offer. A capacity for enlightened tolerance, the ability to see things in a long-term perspective, and the willingness to concede that there just may be another point of view. It has the strength to endure difference for the sake of basic identity and the courage to prefer compromise to conflict. It was this political perception which originally prompted the unprecedented transformation of the British Empire into a Commonwealth. into a voluntary association of equal partners in which no one claims preeminence. An association of countries like the Commonwealth that has this wisdom need have no fear for the future. Far from it, it can look forward with abounding hope, not only for its own well-being, but also that its example may point the way for mankind. At this moment of my Silver Jubilee, I want to thank all those in Britain and the Commonwealth who, through their loyalty and friendship, have given me strength and encouragement during these last 25 years. My thanks go also to the many thousands who have sent me messages of congratulations on my Silver Jubilee, that and their good wishes for the future. In these messages, I have sensed a spirit of happiness, friendship, and hope, and the recognition that people are important as individuals and have a responsibility for each other. May that spirit stay with us when these celebrations are over. My Lord Mayor, when I was 21, I pledged my life to the service of our people, and I asked for God's help to make good that vow. Although that vow was made in my salad days when I was green in judgment, I do not regret nor retract one word of it.
This audience of 800 distinguished guests rises to applaud a witty and indeed a moving speech by Her Majesty.
Her Majesty the Queen was speaking to the whole Commonwealth on this Jubilee Day of the 7th of June. Independent radio news just after three, running a little late because, as some of you may have heard, the Queen's speech at the Guildhall was also running late. President Amin's plane is being shuttled about Europe after it was refused permission to land at Dublin Airport. It was last reported heading for Belgium, but now the Belgian government has announced it won't be allowed to land in their country. Officials say the decision was taken this morning by the Belgian Prime Minister, Leo Tindemans. First indication that it was on its way came early this morning when Uganda Radio said Amin was flying to a country near to England. The radio station said he would complete his journey to London by boat. But the report that his plane was actually en route wasn't confirmed until Dublin Airport officials heard shortly before 1 o'clock this afternoon. Dublin Airport official John King was one of the first people to hear that Amin's plane was on its way.
We got information that an aircraft carrying President Amin was expected to arrive. It hasn't arrived. We don't know whether it's going to arrive or not.
What sort of an aircraft is it?
We don't know. We don't know what aircraft it is or what type or anything.
When did you first get notice that it was coming to Dublin?
It was about a quarter to one. We were advised from our own official sources that they had been advised that it was expected to land at about 1 o'clock.
And where is the plane now? Is it in the area?
No, there has been no contact with the aircraft and the air traffic control services.
The Irish government ordered the airport not to allow the pilot to land his plane unless it was an emergency. Its whereabouts now are still not known, and it's not known if Amin's definitely on board. Tens of thousands of spectators are still thronging the Jubilee procession route the Queen took this morning from Buckingham Palace, and they're patiently awaiting her return journey. Her Majesty has been attending a celebration lunch in the Guildhall, where she's been making a speech being relayed to the world. Before going into the Guildhall, the Queen went on a mini walkabout among the flag-waving crowds. Among them was Mrs. Florence Cook from East London, who was one of the lucky ones to speak to Her Majesty.
The Queen, I've never seen her so close up before. It's really lovely. How do you feel that she actually spoke to you?
Oh,
wow.
So nice. Never expected it. Never expected it. Very nice, that was. Very nice. I'm glad I came. We waited and got froze, but it was worth it. We stood here for about 5 hours now in one spot, and we really got froze, but I'm glad we've done it now, because it was really worth it.
Among the Commonwealth leaders already here for tomorrow's Commonwealth Conference, Australian Prime Minister Malcolm Fraser has been talking about his country's links with both Britain and the United States. He says his country is no longer tied to the apron strings of the major powers.
Australia's policy is all the way with Australia and not with anyone else. Australia under my government won't go all the way with anyone because we will judge issues on their merits. We'll make our own considered judgment. And come out accordingly. It's likely, of course, that many things the United States does, many things Britain does, we would want to support. I have no doubt from time to time there'll be some things we don't want to support, and if it's necessary, we'll say so.
More on the Amin story. France says they're going to let Amin's plane be allowed to land if permission is requested by the pilot. That's news just in. Independent Radio News, it's 3:07.
This is Steve Ryder at the sports desk with the latest racing results. First from Leicester, the 250. First, number 5, Godner, 2-1 favourite. Second, number 3, Fast Bowler, 5-2. Third, number 1, Greek Myth, 130 and 10 ran. From Redcar, the 245. First, number 3, Referendum, 5-2 favourite. Second, number 1, Charter Pearl, 3-1. Third, number 8, Petit Souris, 11-1 and 10 ran. Sandown, the 230. First, number 5, Last Sale, 7-1. Second, number 7, Just Janie, 20-1. Third, number 9, Ravelston, 130 favourite, and 9 ran. And from Chepstow, the 230. First, number 1, Reback, 5-1. Second, number 2, Snack Time, 4-1. Third, number 3, Morning Lee, 5-4 favourite, and 11 ran. Just to bring you up to date on some of the scores in today's County Championship cricket matches, the final days of these games. At Lords, Middlesex against Sussex. Sussex in their second innings have just taken the lead, 217-3. Miandad poised for his century on 98 not out, and Graves is on 9 not out, so Sussex lead by just 8 runs. At Chelmsford, Essex against Surrey. Essex declared at 255-5, and that set Surrey a target of 273 to win. They're in immediate trouble, 26-3, with Butcher, Court, Hardy, Bold Boyce for naught, Howarth, LBW to Turner for naught, and Eunice, Court, Gooch, Bold Boyce for 7. At Canterbury, Kent against Hampshire. Latest score we have, Hampshire in their second innings, 178-4, with Turner out for 64 and Jesty on 40. At Bristol, Gloucestershire against Somerset. Somerset in their second innings, 247-3, with Vivian Richards on 167 and Slocum on 51. But rain has stopped play down there at Bristol. At Northampton, Northants against Leicestershire. A start delayed this morning by rain. Leicestershire now in their first innings have moved on to 125-7 off 42 overs. At Trent Bridge, it's still raining there in the match between Nottinghamshire and Derbyshire. And it's the same position at Old Trafford in the game between Lancashire and Yorkshire. And one result in already today at Oxford. Glamorgan beat Oxford University by 9 wickets. We'll have more cricket scores and more racing results at 3:30.
There's a special Jubilee Year commemorative offer from Shell. A newly minted Jubilee crown for you to spend anywhere or keep as a souvenir. Simply look for the Shell garage displaying the Jubilee crown posters. Drive in, buy a 5-litre can of Shell Super Multigrade Motor Oil, ask for an application leaflet, and send for your free Jubilee crown. Your car needs Shell Super Multigrade Motor Oil. So buy a can today and get your newly minted Jubilee crown free from Shell.
261 Traffic.
Well, traffic remains light on all main roads in and out of town. We have no reports of delays, but plenty of local celebrations are getting underway, and it might be as well to avoid Romford town centre, the marketplace in particular. There's a carnival and a Cockney knees-up in progress, and some traffic congestion towards the focal point. In London, the processional route remains closed. This includes Constitution Hill, Horse Guards Approach Road, Marlborough Road, the Mall, Adelaide Street, William IV Street, Aldwych, Charing Cross, Duncannon Street, Lancaster Place, the Strand, part of Trafalgar Square, the South Side, and in the city, Cannon Street, Fleet Street, Ludgate Hill, New Change, and St Paul's Churchyard.
Traffic should stay away from the centre of town, and please don't park your car anywhere along the route. In about 1 hour's time, the crowd will emerge from the Surrey County Show at Guildford, and the A3 will then be quite busy. Laurie Keenan, AA Road Watch.
Thanks, Laurie. And by the way...